Beautiful special music. I'm sure most of you heard about the earthquake today in Chile this morning or in the middle of the night. 8.8 on the Richter scale, which is incredibly powerful earthquake. And, of course, as the Bible talks about, earthquakes will be speeding up here toward the end time. Of course, there's one in Haiti. And the one, I don't think they know how many people have died, obviously, yet. The initial amount of humans wasn't that high because it was right off the edge, almost in the Pacific Ocean, I guess it is. But there weren't about tsunamis, even all the way to as far as California and Hawaii. So that's amazing there. One thing I didn't mention, which you probably know anyway, is, of course, there's a potluck after services, and then sports night, I think they open the gyms at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock this evening, the YMCA will be open. All right. Had a topic here today. I thought I'd ask a question. Are you a wise guy? Now, when I ask that question, are you a wise guy, it's two different ways to look at that, I guess. You know, some people say, wait a minute, are you a smart aleck? No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, are you a wise person? Am I a wise person? Are we a wise guy? If you want a title, or a wise gal, a wise person. You know, what I really mean is this. Are you a person that has wisdom? Am I a person that has wisdom? And if better yet, are you a person with godly wisdom? I'm sure what you're thinking and what I would think when I say this or think about this is, well, looking at myself, sometimes I have a little wisdom, and sometimes I wonder why I don't have more. And I'm sure we all probably think that sometimes, because sometimes we feel like we're doing okay, but we obviously know we could always do better, don't we? So that's the title, if you want one. Are you a wise guy or wise person? Proverbs talks a lot about what the writer in Proverbs calls fools. Now, who wrote Proverbs? Most of it, or much of it, was written by Solomon. In one way, the wisest man who ever lived, in other ways, not too wise, was he? But it's human nature to think, our outlook is pretty much right. But yet, what does the Bible say? Well, let's turn to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 9, if you would. Proverbs chapter 9. Got a number of scriptures here in Proverbs this afternoon. Proverbs 9 is one I thought we'd begin with. Verse 10, where it says, here's the first way if you or I want to be wise. Here's the first thing to think about. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Remember when Solomon was young and just about to become king? God said, what do you want? What would you ask for? And Solomon thought about it and said, well, above all, I would like to have wisdom. And quite frankly, that is his first step, was realizing that if he was going to receive real wisdom, he needed help from God, didn't it? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So quite frankly, if we read the Bible, if we know what the Bible says, sometimes we think, oh, we don't know very much about the Bible, and obviously some people know more than others, but I can't remember what the exact percentage is, but it's amazing the percentage, the small amount of people in the United States that can name the four Gospels. Now you think, well, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I mean, it seems so simple, and sometimes we think, oh, we don't know that much. When most people in the United States, it's over 50%, if I'm not mistaken, can't tell you the four Gospels. And you think, oh, that can't be right. Well, it is. So here's what I wanted to do here to begin. I want to give us a little test. It's nine questions. I saw this test. It was in a newspaper. And it's called a feel-good test for people to take because it's supposed to be the world's easiest quiz. Now, you don't have to write your answers down. You don't have to tell anybody what your answers are. You don't even have to listen if you don't want to. You're not very wise. But I'm going to give you nine questions from this test called the World's Easiest Test. And after taking this test, it says you're bound to feel a lot smarter. So, again, you can write it down. You can think about it. But keep track of how you do. Number one. How long was the 100 Years' War? We're trying to help you to feel smart, wise. Number two, what country, and I didn't make this up, I got this out of the newspaper. What country makes Panama hats? You might not write that down. You think about it a while. You may even want to pray about it if you're having trouble. Wouldn't suggest that necessarily, but number three, from which animal do we get catgut? From which animal do we get catgut? Number four, I'm going to speed this up a little bit because it's called the World's Easiest Test, and this isn't the purpose of the sermon, it's just to start here. What month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? What month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Number five, what is camel's hair brush made of? What is camel's hair brush made of? Number six, the Canary Islands in the Pacific are named after what dog? That was not really the question. I read that wrong. But anyway, we'll just skip that one. I need to wear my glasses when I'm reading these things. Anyway, that's kind of a little slip of the tongue there by the speaker. Number seven, we'll forget number six. It's too easy to even worry with, isn't it? Number seven, what was King George VI's first name? What was King George VI's first name? Number eight, what color is a purple finch? And number nine, where are Chinese gooseberries from? All right. Anybody want to tell me how long was the 100 Years' War? How long? 100. No, it's 116. They just rounded off to 100. So you're already in the hole. Got to be careful before you answer these questions. You could look really foolish. It's 116 years. Number two, what country makes Panama hats? Anybody know? Panama. Who said that? Sorry, you're wrong. But it's Ecuador. Are you getting a feeling this test wasn't quite as easy as you thought it might be? Ecuador is where Panama hats come from. Now you see why the world's such a messed up place, don't you? From which animal do we get catgut? Well, obviously you know it's not cats. Does anybody know? Catfish? Mr. Gore, you know not to answer questions. You want to come up here? No. No, they come from sheep and dogs. I mean, sheep and horses. I got this dogs on the brain. I can't get this word dog out of my mind. Oh, it's sheep and horses. But that was a good wrong guess. What month did the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Well, it's pretty obvious it's not October, isn't it? It's November. What is camel's hair brush made out of? Anybody know? Squirrel's fur. Canary Islands in the Pacific are named after what dog? Well, it should have been named after what animal. The answer is a dog, but I read it wrong. So they got one right, even though you probably didn't know that. I didn't. What was King George VI's first name? Span? Yeah. My mother used to tell me when they were kids, they would call the grocery store, and they'd say, do you have any Prince Albert in a can? Which was some kind of pipe tobacco or something. They'd say, well, yes, we do. And she'd say, well, you better take him out. He's probably getting suffocated in there in that can. They thought that was funny. And you know what? It kind of shows you how times have changed, didn't it? That was kind of funny. But but King George VI's first name was Albert. And two more. What color is a purple finch? Crimson. And what are Chinese where are Chinese gooseberries from? New Zealand. See, the point is, this is just a simple little test that, quite frankly, almost none of us could get right because we don't know everything. And there is an area called knowledge that, you know, knowledge is basically the accumulation of facts, but there's an area between knowledge and wisdom. You know, we want to become wise. I want to be wiser than I am. All of us want to be wiser than we are. And yet, you know, it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of becoming wise. So we've all, if we've gone to school, no matter whether it's the, you know, grammar school, high school, college, graduate school, whatever, we have seen people that seem awfully smart as far as book knowledge, but yet they probably aren't that wise. Because knowledge is the accumulation of facts, but there's an area between just accumulating facts, knowledge, and wisdom, and that's called what I want us to look at today, and that is understanding. Solomon, God gave Solomon understanding that helped him become wise. And sometimes we can acquire more and more knowledge on a subject, but yet that doesn't necessarily make us wise. I remember this so well. I may have said this before, but I remember very well one year at the Feast of Tabernacles. It was held in Chattanooga, and this was back in the it was around 1990, 91, 92, somewhere in there. But the Feast of Tabernacles was in Chattanooga, and we had Family Day up at, I believe it was at Raccoon Mountain. And probably some of you were there at this particular feast, but I was asked to do something that year. I was asked to put together tests. We were going to all have these tests where we were going to see how well we knew the Bible. Now, the test was easy for me because I made up the questions. You know, it's like, well, it's easy to know the Hundred Years' War isn't 100 years when you write the question and when you know. But when you don't know the question, anybody would say 100 years. I don't know if anybody would say cat guts made out of catfish, but you know, I wouldn't go that far. But, you know, when you make the questions, it seems easy, doesn't it, when you're making out the questions? So I was asked to make a set of 10 questions, easiest questions I was supposed to find about the Bible, and I would ask questions like, which of these books is not one of the Gospels? And I'd put Matthew, Mark, and it was multiple choice. I'd put like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Revelation, or just something like that. But I had 10 questions that were supposed to be easy Bible questions. And then if you could get, the goal was if you got 7 out of 10, you got to take the second test, which were supposed to be harder questions, but not supposedly that hard. And then if you got 7 out of 10 of that, you went to the third category, and the thing was to find out who was the smartest person as far as able to answer these Bible questions at the Feast of Tabernacles in Chattanooga that year. Now, we had a booth there at the Family Day, and there were people came by that booth all day long. It really was great participation. Everybody had a good time. Well, I won't say everybody. Yeah, they had a good time until they, you know, the test was graded. But everybody, with so many people there, hundreds of people took that test. And the thing that amazed me, and again, I don't know what I'd have done if I hadn't made the test, if I was just taking the test. But the thing that amazed me is most people, over half the people, couldn't get 7 out of 10 on that first test to move on to the second test. And these were church members. These were people there at the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, you know, you're going to miss some. So it's not like you're expected to get them all right, or I would expect to get them all right. But most people couldn't get to the second level. But I found that most people that got to the second level, where you had to get 7 out of 10 to get to the third level, most of those could get to the third level. It's kind of interesting. You either couldn't get that first group, 7 out of 10, but if you got that, usually you get to the third group. But all day long, we took those tests, we graded those tests, and the most amazing thing to me was at the end of the day, the person that got the highest score was blind. Think about it. They were blind, and yet they got the highest score on the test. Because for some reason, you know, I'm sure he had Braille and listened to tapes, but he was able to comprehend. But I was so impressed because, and again, this was just a test. It was no big deal. It wasn't something that anybody's not going to be able to go out to eat that night, and spend their second tithe, and have a good time. It's just a test. It's just totally a fun thing. Not to try to, the point wasn't to do anything except to let us see how we could do. But the point I'm asking here is, what is knowledge? As I said before, knowledge, like book knowledge, is the accumulation of facts. Now, some people are able to memorize better than others. Some people are able to accumulate facts and get in their mind. Some people are good at math. Some are not good at math. Some are good at foreign languages. Some are not good at foreign languages. Some are good at other subjects and this, that, and the other thing. But knowledge is the accumulation of facts. But there's something else, like I said before, which is the bridge between knowledge and wisdom, and that's understanding, to be able to understand why things are done. Have you ever heard this statement made? And I know you have. I've heard this said so many times in my life that, oh, you can prove anything you want from the Bible. You'll hear people say that all the time. Oh, you can prove anything you want from the Bible. Can you? No. You can't prove all kind of anything false from the Bible. But yet people, because they don't want to listen sometimes, they don't want to read the Bible, they don't want to accept that maybe God's Word might cause us to change. And I'm talking about out there in this whole world, people oftentimes, they don't want to change. I know of a lady that was at work one day, and they said there were a bunch of them standing around the water cooler one Monday morning, and one of them asked a question. This is a true story. One of them said to this group, there were several in the group, the employee said, would you rather have $10 million or be able to live forever? Would you rather have $10 million or be able to live forever? And she said, one person said, oh, that's easy. I'd take the money anytime. And she said every single person around that water cooler said they would rather have the money than live forever. But yet, why are you and I here? Because we want to live forever, don't we? Why would anybody want to be a Christian? Just because it's cool? Oh, they want to live forever. They want to live forever in a world that God says will be different. Kingdom of God. I just read earlier, remember Proverbs says the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Some of the people that may not have any kind of education, in God's eyes, are some of the wisest people in the world. I like to think I'm wiser than I am. You probably like to think you're wiser than you are. You know, I was kidding Mr. Corbin. I've been around him enough to know he's a wise man. Don't get carried away. You're not perfect yet, but you're wise. Well, you know. No, seriously, he is. Be the last nice thing I'll probably ever say about you, but so enjoy it. But we all want to be wiser, don't we? Some of the biggest fools I've ever met are the oldest people I've ever met. Don't you think that sometimes? Some of the wisest people you could ever meet are young folks. You know, I heard a little girl singing that hymn, and she was enjoying singing it. All hell, the power of Jesus. She was singing because she wanted to sing. And that was a wise thing. Because God says when you come to church, we sing. We don't sit back and like, you know, I mean, some people, if we all sang like some of us, now obviously not, I mean, I don't sing that well and others don't. either. But, you know, if we all just kind of sing, so what's the use of even having song service? But God says, sing a joyful noise, doesn't he? But the point of the matter is, we want more wisdom. Look at Proverbs. Well, first let's look at Colossians. Colossians chapter 4. Just one verse here in Colossians. Verse 6. Paul says, let your speech, talking to those in Colossae, and Paul was writing this book from prison. He said, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. What he was saying is, you know, salt in a meal is good, but when there's no salt, it tastes a little bland, doesn't it? But if you put too much salt, you can hardly eat the food. And in our life, when we say things, God is telling us to think about what we're saying. Don't always just blurt out things without thinking. Proverbs 25, same concept. Proverbs 25, verse 11. Says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Point is, wisdom comes over time, doesn't it? None of us have anywhere close to the wisdom of God. None of us have anywhere close to the wisdom of Jesus Christ. But our goal is, as we go before God, as we study His Word, as we pray, as we try to grow as a person and as a Christian, we want to become wiser. We want to become more understanding. Hey, we're going to make all kinds of mistakes. There isn't a day goes by, probably any of us doesn't say something that we think, man, why did we say that? But yet, the school of hard knocks is not the best school. You know, you always, oh, I'm going to the school of hard knocks. That's why I'm, and sometimes you hear these people talking about that, and you think, you want to say, yeah, and you're still in that school of hard knocks, just beating your head against the wall sometimes and trying to prove that you can get a square peg in a round hole or a round hole, peg in a square hole, or just forcing it. And some people just keep going through their life without realizing that it doesn't work to do things the wrong way. It doesn't work to get drunk every night and feel bad the next day and wonder why you feel bad. So, let's ask ourselves some questions to help each of us determine how much godly wisdom we have. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Hey, none of us even come close to the measure and the stature of Jesus Christ, but we're Christians, aren't we? And we want to, don't we? So I got seven questions, and again, it's, you know, it's not going to take that long, 30 minutes maximum, the rest of the sermon. But I want to ask ourselves seven questions for me to ask myself, for you to ask yourself, to think about it, in this concept of, are we a wise person? Are we growing in wisdom? Are we becoming more like, we know we want to be. We know we want to be wiser. And we know we fail at times. We know we're not there. But yet, we want to be wise. Number one is, do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? Do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? Well, you think about that for a minute. Most anybody would say, well, yeah, of course I don't trust myself more than I trust God. But let's think about it a little bit deeper. Because you know, and I know, myself, and you know yourself. And you know times that you may have said, why did I do that? And I know times I've thought, well, why did I do that? Proverbs 3, verse 5, says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Well, there's the first point. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't just trust God when you get what you want to hear. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. I remember when I was counseling for baptism and the minister, and I don't know why I even thought this? And, you know, all these deep questions were out there, and I was asking the minister all these things, Council for Baptism, and he said, is there anything else you want to ask me? And I said, yes, can I eat pepperoni pizza? And I'm thinking, what has that got to do? And he just looked at me. I know he was thinking, have I been wasting the last 2 hours? And have I been wasting this council? You want to know whether you can eat pepperoni pizza? And I don't know why I asked that question, but it was just in my mind. Can I eat pepperoni pizza? And I remember him saying, I don't know. Go call a meat market and ask them. And I remember thinking, I don't think that was a very wise question. But don't ask me why I said it. But I still remember that to this day. I didn't call a meat market because I found out it was, hey, if it's turkey, you can. But if it's pork, no. Kind of knew the answer before I even asked. But that was the final answer or final question I had that day before he told me whether he thought I was ready for baptism. And you know what that answer was, don't you? He thought it was time for have another little session with me. Trust in God, it said. You ever remember that song? I can't remember the woman that sang it. I think her name was Terry Clark. It's a country music singer, and it was titled "I Just Want to Be Mad for a While." And I remember I wrote down the words: "I think I'm right. I think you're wrong. So leave me alone. I just want to be mad for a while." Now, does that make any sense? Does the whole world just want to be mad? It's like saying, "God, go on vacation for my life a while. Just leave me alone, God." We say that to God sometimes. I just want to be mad for a while. But God said through the words of Solomon, Proverbs 5:3, you know, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean out on your own understanding. Then verse 6, and all your ways, all our ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. But we have to look to God and trust more in God than we trust in ourselves. And sometimes that may sound easy, but it's not as easy as it sounds, is it? Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23 and 24. I think you know the result, I'll tell you, not that you care, but the next time when I came back for counseling again, I didn't ask that question about the pepperoni pizza because I felt so stupid that I asked that. But it was a burning issue of my mind at that particular moment. Told me that maybe you're not thinking clearly, totally. Jeremiah 10, verse 23 and 24. God speaking here. He said, am I a God? I'm not even in the right chapter. I mean, I thought, that doesn't look right. It's 10. I was in 23. Chapter 10, I think I said that. Jeremiah 10, 23 and 24. Okay, this makes more sense. Oh, Lord, Jeremiah says here, I know the way of man is not in himself. And quite frankly, you know, we're kind of pretty pathetic on our own, aren't we, sometimes? When we try to do it our way and try to just force our way. Oh, Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. We need something further than just our own understanding, book of knowledge, without help from something higher, which, of course, is God. He says, oh, Lord, correct me, but with justice. You know, Lord, correct me now, God. No, just don't. You think God would correct us unjustly? A just God? Of course not. He said, oh, Lord, correct me with justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Because if God treated us the way we deserve sometimes, how well would we do? We often bargain with God in our prayers when we think we need him. We say, God, I'll do this, but you need to do that. God, I'm going to do this for you if you do all this for me. You know, God, I'll do this if you do that. And really, that's what it is, isn't it? He is doing that. giving us a chance for eternal life, and you got these people said they'd rather have $1 million than live forever because they weren't seeing the whole picture. So ask yourself the question, do I ask God for wisdom? And when we do ask him, are we listening to his answer? Or are we trying to look for ourselves for the answers? So number one, do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? Number two, do we get all the facts? When we're trying to gain wisdom, do we get all the facts? Yogi Berra was a baseball player that I used to love when I grew up. I think he's still alive. I saw him on TV a while back, I think at the All-Star game. And he said, I'm not lost, I'm just making good progress. He would say all these kind of crazy things. I'm not lost, I'm just not making good progress. Remember, to gain wisdom, we need the facts, we need the knowledge, but we need to gain understanding along with that knowledge and put it in a godly pattern to be able to have godly wisdom. Proverbs 18, verse 13. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's a folly and a shame to him. You've heard of people that you don't really want to even ask them a question because you know they're not even going to listen to what you want to ask them. They already know what the answer is before they even hear what the question is. And we all do that from time to time. I remember when I was in college at the University of Tennessee, talking to Alan Dance today about Tennessee, and I wasn't in the church back then. I was beginning to get interested in the church when I was actually in high school, and then I went to college, and I got more interested. But there was a period of time when I was at college, I was thinking about a sermonette that Alan gave he gave it in Chattanooga. Maybe he'll give it here sometime. But it was very good, but it was very humorous too. But I remember a bunch of us, there were four or five of us, going to the Tennessee-Alabama football game. And it was on a Saturday, and I wasn't in church then. But we were driving to Birmingham from Knoxville. So Tennessee to Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama, for the football game. And we're driving on a Friday night, and it was dark, and I was driving, and somebody said, I think you may have made a wrong turn. And I was like, no, I know where I'm going. And we just kept driving, and the roads kept, it wasn't interesting, it kept like, I was even beginning to think maybe I was lost too, but I didn't feel like admitting it. And they kept saying, I think you may be going the wrong way. No, I'm heading right down there to Birmingham, Alabama. And then I saw the sign, Welcome to Georgia. Now, how do you think I felt? Oh, I guess maybe I am going the wrong way. I'm in Georgia. So I had to turn around and, listen to them tell me how, well, yeah, I told you you're going the wrong way. And they were right. That's the sad part about it. They were right. I was in Georgia. But yet, at the time, I knew I didn't know where I was. But yet, in your own mind, if you just keep driving, we're heading that way, we'll find where we're going. Isn't it amazing, though, how we do? We got to get the facts. You need a map. The Bible is our map to help us to know where we're going. It's okay to admit we don't know everything. Let's take just a look at an example in the Bible of Esther. Book of Esther, just a quick example here. I won't spend that much time on most of these points unless you're getting concerned. But in Esther chapter 1, verse 1, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this was the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia, as if we would know the difference, over 127 provinces. In those days when King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of the kingdom, which was in Shushan, the citadel. So here's the king. Now, verse 3 through 5, they're having a big banquet in Hazareus is serving all these food and drinks to all the important people. In verse 7, as they served drinks in the golden vessels, so things were really impressive here. He's trying to impress all the people. And each vessel being different from the other, with royal wine in abundance, and according to the generosity of the king, he was really feeling good. He was showing off how important he was. In accordance with the law, and the drinking was not compulsory. Like, you didn't have to drink, but... So the king had ordered all the officers of the household that they should do according to each man's pleasure. Just do what you want, have a good time. But Queen Vashti also made a feast for the women in the royal palace, which belonged to the king. And on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded these people that worked for him, seven eunuchs, who served in the presence of the king, to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown, in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come to the king's command, brought by his eunuchs. Therefore the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. I read what the verses said. You know, I heard in when I was in Ambassador College, actually, two different explanations of this. One, I heard the explanation that this was the... we read the words. I heard a man say this was the first recorded act in the Bible of the Women's Lib movement. It doesn't mean it wasn't, but it doesn't say it, does it? And I heard another example was that read a sermon, actually, where a man said Queen Vashti had strength and courage to not dance naked in front of the king and his guest. But it doesn't say anything about her being naked. It said to go in her royal. It doesn't say all the... It could be true, either one of those things. But yet what happens when you don't get all the facts, and that's what's wrong with religion today in this world. There's all these religions, but they don't get the facts. They come up and they read something and they create this being that they want it to be. And you got all these different religions, and yeah, we don't know everything all the time. We're hopefully constantly learning, but hopefully I feel confident when people start... The big trunks of the trees are very easy to see. And when people start telling you things like the Sabbath's done away, the holy day's done away, where do you prove it? Where do you go? There is nowhere to go. They use these weird little tiny scriptures and try to create this big straw man out of things that don't exist, just like this set of scriptures. It doesn't say this was the first example of the Women's Lib movement. It doesn't say this was a Queen Vashti was told to take off her clothes, and that's what... It just said she refused to do what the king told her to do, and because of that, it could be because of something he did wrong. It could be something... We don't know. But yet, when you don't get all the facts... And all the facts aren't here, are they, to give a definite, total, 100% guaranteed explanation of what the Scripture here says. So to gain wisdom, or to grow in wisdom, which is knowledge, understanding, gaining into wisdom, one thing we need to do is get all the facts. One thing I need to do is speed up. Number three, and I will. Maybe. Number three, I will. Do we seek wise counsel? Now, what do I mean by counsel? Counsel is advice, and hopefully the counsel you and I listen to are from wise people. There's an obvious one. Let's turn there. 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings 12, very obvious, but I think this... all we need to say on this point, because this gives you an example of not using wise counsel. And it's King Solomon's son, Rehoboam, who became king after King Solomon. So here was King Solomon. He had died, and King Rehoboam, his son, was the king. And he was a new king. You know, right starting out, remember how Solomon, when he first started out, he asked God for wisdom. Well, what Rehoboam did, In verse 4, the folks came to him, they said, "Your father made our yoke heavy," a lot of taxes. "Therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we'll serve you." Because there was a lot of, won't go into all the details, but there's a lot of controversy about whether Israel would all stay together or whether part of the tribes would go a different way, and that's a whole other sermon, but just the concept here. So he said to them, "Depart for 3 days and come back to me," and the people departed. Not a bad answer. Let me think about it. He didn't just give them an answer without thinking. He said, "Let me think about it." So King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father while Solomon lived. And he said, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to them, if you'll be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. If you're good to them, they're going to be good to you." You know, you think of the people we've worked for. If they're good to you, we want to work for them. When they treat you bad, you don't want to work for them. And you're grumbling and griping and complaining types of things all around the office. But he, King Rehoboam, rejected the counsel which the elders gave him, Solomon's older men. And, you know, it doesn't mean the older men are always the right men, but in this particular case they were. So he rejected that, and he consulted the young man who he had grown up with, who stood before him. And they said, he asked them, what counsel do you give? How should we answer this people who have spoken to me and asked to have their yoke lightened? Or in some translation says the taxes lowered. The young man who had grown up with him spoke to him and said, "Thus you should speak to this people who have spoken to you and say, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us.' Here's my answer. You shall say this, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father laid a heavy yoke on you, I'll add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'" In other words, I'm going to show you I'm in charge. And you know what happened? They broke away. And Israel and Judah broke into two kingdoms because Rehoboam listened to bad counsel. He had some good counsel from the elders that had served with their father. And then he got this terrible counsel, and he listened to that. Not a way to gain wisdom, is it? When we seek counsel, who do we go to? Somebody that's going to tell you what you want to hear, humanly speaking, or somebody that you know will tell you what you feel God would like? I had someone call me today from another church area and ask me a question. And I felt pretty inadequate answering the question because I wasn't sure what the answer was. I tried to give him as good an answer as I could, but I told him, "I'm not really sure I'm right, but this is what I would do. But you might want to ask somebody else." Because we don't know it. When we start trying to act like we know everything, when we obviously don't, we're not helping anybody. But yet, wise counsel is thinking about it, asking God for help, and going to people that we feel would do the best in a godly way. Number 4, how to be a wise guy or gal. Do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Do we follow a God-oriented plan for us? Or do we just do whatever we want to do? We just out there just whatever we want to do. Is that going to make you happy in the long run? Nobody plans to fail. Nobody sets out and say, "I want to fail. I want to fail this class." But when you don't go to class, you probably will fail. We don't plan to fail. We just tend to sometimes fail with our plans, don't we? Because we don't follow through with what makes sense. In Proverbs 4, verse 25, I'm just going to read this one verse on this point. Proverbs 4, 25. Let your eyes look straight ahead. And your eyelids look right before you. Stay focused. Don't let these things that you know in your heart aren't right just push you over on a path that's going to cause you nothing but trouble, trials. As I said, nobody goes out and says, I think I'm just going to flunk out of college. Well, when I went to college, there were people that you knew were going to flunk out. At University of Tennessee, there were people I knew they had no chance because I never saw them with a book open. They were having a big time, but they had to go home when the money ran out. And it wasn't a good situation. Who knows what happened? Some of them, I'm sure, turned their life around and did okay. I know my son, when he got out of high school, he knew it all. He didn't need to go to college. You know, he went to college, I think it was 4 years after he graduated from high school, and he'd worked at all these, he'd worked, you know, he had some decent jobs. He worked at some restaurants, and then he got up and worked at Home Depot, no, Lowe's, I believe, or Office Depot. But he was getting better. But then he decided he wanted to go to college. And now he's in his last year at Middle Tennessee State University making almost all A's. And he told me, Dad, he said, you know what, if I'd have gone to college right out of high school, I'd have flunked out. But now I want to go. And when you want to do something, when you want to live God's way, when you want to get wisdom, that's when it's easier to get it. But, as I said, we've got to follow a God-oriented goal. We've got to look forward to God's way and stay focused on that because that's what's going to help with our life. So that's point 4.5. Do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? You know, some people just they get off on all these little tangents and things when we need balance. Nobody's got proper total balance. Of course, God did. Jesus Christ had proper balance. But nobody has total, complete balance. No one. I remember once at church, it was actually in Nashville. It was several years ago. A man came. I spoke one day, and I gave a sermon on prophecy. And I don't even remember the total topic. I just remember it was on prophecy. He didn't normally come to church. And he actually came up after the sermon. And he said, when are you going to be giving another sermon on prophecy? And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, when are you going to speak again? And I said, well, I said such and such, whenever. He said, were you going to speak on prophecy then? I said, I don't know what I'm going to speak on. He says, well, I want to come if you're going to speak on prophecy. And I said, well, then don't come because I don't know if I'm going to speak on prophecy. And the point of the matter is, why did you just go if there's one little thing? But yet, the Bible is all about prophecy, but it's all about a lot of other things too, isn't it? And prophecy is a big part of the Bible, but so is a lot of other things, and we got to have balance. The company I used to work for, they sent all the sales reps out to this place called Pecos River in New Mexico, and they did all this for team building, they called it, but we're all supposed to go out there and work together, and they did all these things to help us work together. But one thing they had us do, it may sound odd. In fact, it kind of was odd. But they had us climb a telephone pole. You know, it had a little, you know, whatever, sticking out the stakes or nails, or not nails, but bolts in the telephone pole. We had to climb this real high telephone pole, probably about, I don't know, four times the size of the ceiling here. And when you got to the top, there was a little plank. Now, lest you get too worried, they had us all, you know, we could fall, we're not going to get hurt. You know, it wasn't like if you fall, well, got to get a new ploy here, we lost this one. But we had to climb up there, and we're all strapped in. And some people didn't make it. Some people couldn't do it because, man, it was hard. And I remember when my time came, I remember the man, when they put me up, he said, whatever you do, when you get to the top, focus on something way out in the distance. Don't look down, because if you look down, you'll fall. Now, again, if you fall, you just, you know, fail. But you wanted to, if you're going to get up to all that pole, you wanted to at least look out and, you know, feel like you'd conquered it. But I remember going up, and it was hard. And there were certain people that I thought, sure, they could climb it, but they just couldn't do it. But I did it. But, it wasn't easy, trust me. But I got to the top, and when I got up on that little plank, I looked out over the horizon, and it was a good feeling to know I'd done it. And then I looked down, and I fell almost immediately. Now, again, that was the point, to go down at some point, but balance, you had to have balance up there, and the way to be balanced was to focus on something out in the distance. What do we want to focus on? We want to focus not on all these little short-term things about what's going to happen, you want to know what's going to happen tomorrow, but the big focus is the future, isn't it? The big focus is, what are we going to do with our life? What's our life going to become? What do we want with our life? We want to be wise. We want to look at the big picture, all of it, not just every little snippet along the way. Romans 10, verse 1 and 2. Romans 10, verse 1 and 2 is a good scripture on this point. It says, "Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved." Paul loved his fellow Israelites, and a lot of them were not following God's ways. He says, "Man, my heart's desire, my prayer to God, I'm praying, God, oh, I want Israel to be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a great zeal for God, but not according to knowledge." They had these zeals. Look at what Christ and Paul had to deal with, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Zealots, all these different groups, all claiming all these things, and none of them really focusing on what really was the important thing. Paul said, focus on Christ. Focus on God's way. He says, "For they being ignorant of God's righteousness, and seeking to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted to God's righteousness." They were so intent on saying they knew how to do it that they didn't take the time to see how God was telling them to do it. Crazy, isn't it? But so true. They were zealous as long as it was their way. God said, do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? Do we read the Bible? How many times have you seen, you go to a bookstore and they'll say, the Bible, New Testament and Psalms. They won't even put the rest of the Bible in the Bible sometimes. Well, how could you have a Bible that only has the New Testament and Psalms? Or how could you have a Bible, you look at the Jews today, they'll have a Bible, but it's only the Old Testament. The Bible is the Old Testament and the New Testament. God's way is not just one little thing. It's looking forward. The Zealots had a lot of zeal, but they lacked balance. Proverbs 13, verse 20. Proverbs 13, verse 20. "He who walks with wise men or women will be wise." That seems so simple, doesn't it? If you walk with wise people, you'll probably be wise. But the companion of fools will be destroyed. If you run around with people that don't have any desire to live God's way, and yet you want to be a Christian, you're going to have some trials. If you live with people that have goals and wise goals, you'll still stumble and fall, and so will they. But you'll do a lot better. Number six, there's only two more. Do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? Do we really apply wisdom to what to intellectually know? Now let's review what we've been over. Godly wisdom doesn't involve a process. You gain these facts, knowledge. But that knowledge, we work toward understanding the knowledge and how it applies, which gives us wisdom. We may know things intellectually, but then we've got to use the spiritual side, don't we? Proverbs 18, verse 1 and 2. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desires. In other words, if you're just going to sit around and say, I know everything, not good. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against wise judgment. He doesn't want to listen to anybody else's opinion because he's got it all figured out. And guess what? He won't ever get it figured out because he won't listen to anybody but himself. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. You know, I know everything. I don't need anybody to help me, is what you hear him say sometimes. I'm not going to listen to you. We've all heard it. Don't our parents look so much smarter the older we get? I mean, I always thought I had good parents. Man, the older I get, the more I realize how really good they were, how much they really did care for me. Man, I'm thankful I had parents that cared. But do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? And then finally, number seven, do we handle conflict wisely? Because in life, you're going to have conflicts. In life, everything's not going to go always the way you or I want it to go. Because we deal with other people. We're not alone in this world. And probably for most of us, if you ask yourself, do we handle conflict wisely? You'll say, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And, you know, that's just part of being a human being. But do we work toward handling conflicts wisely instead of always flying off the deep end when something doesn't go the way? A lot of quarrels start, and most quarrels, I guess you could say, start by one foolish remark. And the other person just can't walk away and ignore it. A lot of problems, a lot of quarrels start by one foolish remark. And yeah, you could say, that was so stupid. And you know, it probably was stupid. But man, once you ratchet up the next level, you'll wish you just sat back and just took it. Because nobody's happy after the big quarrel's over. Proverbs 20, verse 3. It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. It doesn't take much to start a quarrel. It doesn't take much to start an argument. Just a stupid word. What takes wisdom is backing away when it's not the way you want it to be. Remember, I had a woman call me once in church and was complaining about her husband. And I tried, not maybe as well as I could have, but I tried to gently as possible tell her that maybe it would be good if they both worked on a few things, not knowing all the facts and not totally knowing exactly what I should say. But I tried to say, well, you know, maybe we could both You could both look at, not we, I wasn't involved, but you could both look at a few things. And I remember what she said. She said, I'm not doing anything till he changes. Once he changes, then maybe I can make a few changes. Now, it could be just the other way around. It could be the husband telling me that about the wife. But what incentive is there to change? Like the sermonette Alan gave, if there's only one person trying, what's the incentive? Yet God says, remember he says, turn the other cheek. Well, that's hard, isn't it? It's so hard to say, okay, all right. But do we handle conflict wisely? Because that is a way of showing God that we want to be a wise person. Let's look at one other verse here. Back in Genesis chapter 4. You know the story, but let's just look at it briefly as we begin to wrap up here. In Genesis chapter 4, verse 6 through 8, you know the story, Cain and Abel, and Cain brought his offering, and Abel brought his offering, and God accepted Abel's offering, but God didn't feel right. He wasn't accepting Cain's. And in verse 6, after God did this, actually verse 5, Cain was very angry and his countenance changed, fell. He wasn't happy that God didn't accept his offering. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? Why do you look so glum? In other words, if you do well, will you not be accepted? Just change is what he was saying. You made a mistake, change. If you do well, you'll be accepted. And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And his desire, or sin's desire, is for you. But Cain, he said, you should rule over it. Sin wants to bring us down. Satan wants to bring us down. And God said to Cain the same thing he's saying to us every day. Don't let it do it to you. Fight it. Change. Accept. There was a church area I was at once, and I'll never forget this. There was the minister there gave a sermon one day on a subject, and somehow he was talking at the end of the sermon about how several people in the church area had gone over to their house the Saturday night before, and they'd played penny poker. Just playing a little penny poker and just having a little fun. Not that they did it every day, but they were just having a little fun. And there was a big uproar there about the fact that they were gambling pennies. So the next week, he gave an entire sermon on forgiveness and how we need to forgive people. And he went through the whole thing. At the very end of the sermon, I'll never forget this, he said, brethren, how many of God's commandments did we break that night just sitting around playing penny poker? But he didn't know that in the back of the room, one member yelled, all of them. Isn't that sad? Sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees. Sometimes we're so intent on judging everybody else that we don't have the balance to handle our own conflict wisely. Why does she have? Happened to be a woman that said it. Why did she have to do that? Why couldn't she? She could have gone up and talked to him privately. God said, we need to look at ourselves. Let's look at one other scripture, Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. Verse 3 and 4. So let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Wouldn't it be nice if this world, nothing was done out of selfish ambition or conceit? But in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look not out only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. Paul is saying, esteem others. Look to others. Don't feel that you always have to win. You don't have to quarrel. You don't have to win these conflicts. You have to realize that relationships can be destroyed by words, by our mouth, by our tongue, by the things we say. So, in conclusion, ask yourself, and I need to ask myself, are you, am I, a wise guy or a wise gal? Do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? Number two, do we get all the facts? Number three, do we seek out wise counsel? Number four, do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Number five, do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? Number six, do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? And number seven, do we handle conflict wisely? The point is, you want to be wise. I want to be wise. You want to be wiser. I want to be wiser. None of us are there yet, are we? But we want to become wise. Let's close by turning to Psalm 131. Very short psalm, but I think it concludes the matter here. My Bible has a little heading under the psalm, A Simple Trust in God. or simple trust in the Lord. Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor my eyes lofty. Neither do I concern myself with great matters, with things too profound for me. See, that's the problem sometimes. Sometimes we're so into our ego, people are so into winning, proving they're right, that they don't realize, you know, God, some things we're never going to solve on our own. Only God coming back and sending Christ back can ever solve the problems of this world. He says, surely I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, O church of God, he's saying, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. God says, calm your soul. God says, be a wise man. Be a wise woman. He says, look to God.